Chris, you have become the world's greatest radio pinch hitter.
Thank you very much, Mike. It's always a pleasure to be on here. I'm not sure I'm worthy anymore after your big promotion.
Well, that's true. Well, you can hang with us. You can shine my shoes when we get done. Just kidding.
All right.
Hey, I appreciate it. Seriously, I appreciate your time. And I do want to talk a little recruiting, but I like having you on because we can go all across the board. The first thing I've got to ask you has nothing to do with recruiting or football or basketball. Your boss and our friend Will Stewart just got out of jail.
Yes, he did. He actually did a little thing, raising some money for some muscular dystrophy. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yes.
But, yeah, we managed to raise $4,100 through campaign on the message board, which is really good.
That's outstanding. That's just marvelous.
Yeah, that's something I think we're capable of doing. You know, we have a large audience. And, you know, so it's something we would, you know, consider doing in the future. And he was approached maybe a month ago about it and decided to take it up, and it was a big success.
Now, he got out pretty quickly. I'm thinking you were probably thinking, good, we'll be in jail all day. I can do whatever I want with a website, have all kinds of fun. But he was out like in an hour. Kind of sentences that.
It was about an hour, and actually it wasn't really jail, I don't believe. I think he has a little picture in the office where they snapped a photo of him behind some fake bars. But they were actually down in the Comfort Inn near Radford.
Yeah. They did one of those around here a few years ago, and I went to visit a friend of mine and donate a little money, and they were, like, sitting at a table with pizza. I said, wait a second. They wouldn't let me eat any of the pizza either. The inmates were eating the pizza. But, it goes to a good cause, and that's great that you guys were able to raise that much. And I believe his goal was, like, $3,000, so he shattered that.
Yeah, the goal was actually $5,000. We weren't exactly how much
whoops.
We could do, but, you know, we got pretty close, and I think TSO was actually, they brought in more money than anybody else. So
well, that's just terrific. And you're right about that community coming forth and delivering, and that's great that I've often said it's the most active and best message board in college sports, and it's great that they were able to come through for him like that. Hey, I haven't been on there in a couple of hours. What's the reaction to Jay Smith? I imagine everybody knew the Granby receiver was going to NC State. That's no surprise, is it?
No, it's not a surprise at all, and I don't think you're not seeing anybody upset. It's just like, well, you know, we knew there was a pretty good possibility this was going to happen. You know, if the Hokies had gotten him, it would have been more like icing on the cake, you know, with the recruiting class they have already. You know, you consider that his father played at NC State. Jay grew up going to NC State games and going to football camps there. He was just so familiar with the school, you know. It was kind of tough to see him going anywhere else.
Yeah, the dad connection, it's hard to overcome that, and that's something Virginia Tech has taken great advantage of. And I remember one of the earlier years I covered, you had Beasley, Housewright, I think Chad Cooper came in during that. I mean, they were like five or six what you call legacies on that team, and that's a strong pull for a kid.
Yeah, the Hokies have always done well with family. It seems like whenever you have a brother or a father or an uncle that has played football at Tech, then, you know, that recruit will end up choosing Virginia Tech. Seems like anybody who gets into the program always seems to have a good experience, and when they have a relative that's a recruit, that recruit generally ends up at Tech.
I was saying before I brought you on, Chris, that, you know, I've got Chris Horn's rankings up here and looking at all the color blocks filled in, and there's, like, now two white spaces in the top 20. Which is amazing. I seem to remember last year when most of the prospects went out of state, a lot of those decisions weren't made late. But if you go to the top 14, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 kids going to Virginia Tech and 4 going to Virginia with 2 undecided. So 11 of the prospects there staying in state. Quite a difference from last year.
Absolutely. And, you know, everybody said that was probably just going to be a one-year thing, just a little blip on the radar. And I think that's proven to be true. I think the Hokies really kicked their recruiting in another gear this year, and it obviously helped bringing Kurt Newsom on board, who's really big out in the Tidewater area. And, you know, the Hokies, it's tough when you lose so many talented in-state kids like that. It kind of hurts your pride, even though, you know, that there's really nothing you could do about it. Most of those kids had their minds set on going out of state to begin with, so I don't think there was much the Tech coaches could do about that. But I do think it probably did hurt their pride a little bit, and they come out guns blazing this year, you know, obviously what they did over the summer. And they'd like to close out with Chris Hill, I would think, is their number one target left on board in the state of Virginia.
Yeah, he's number 8 and the highest-ranked prospect not yet committed. And when he goes, every of the top 14 will all be committed. You know, it's interesting. You can look at this, and I guess if you're a UVA fan, you can say, hey, we're doing better. We got three of the top five. And if you're a Tech fan, you can say, hey, we're doing better. We got five of the top 11. It looks like both schools have, you know, like you say, regained their footing in the state a little bit. And, you know, Chris Horn thinks it's fairly even. Yes, UVA has three of the top five, but Tech has number one in Tyrod Taylor, and that kind of is a great equalizer. But UVA doing pretty darn well in state, too. They've got number two in Peter Lowitz, number four in, I don't know if it's Jay Courtney or Jake Courtney Williams, and number five in Terrence Fells Danlicer. So good recruiting all around in the state this year.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Both fan bases have a good reason to be optimistic about their classes. You know, UVA got the quarterback that fits their system, you know, and the Hokies got the quarterback that fits their system. UVA likes a pocket quarterback, an NFL prototype quarterback, like a Matt Schaub, to be able to run that offense. And, you know, generally the Hokies prefer a mobile quarterback. So I think both schools, both coaching staffs, both fan bases will be very satisfied with their classes when signing day comes around.
Hey, real quick, I guess we got a few more minutes. Before we go to the break, I want to talk a little basketball recruiting, too, because when Chris was on last week, the other Chris, we talked about Tech signings, and everybody seemed to be kind of, you know, where's Gus? Where's Gus Gilchrist? And we both pointed out that, you know, signing day isn't it. It's not just like the only day you can sign. And sure enough, earlier this week, Augustus Gus Gilchrist of Camp Springs, Maryland, did sign with the Hokies, and that kind of really puts this class over the top. This kid's 6'9", 235 pounds. He's a ready-made. He's not one of those 6'9 kids you got to put 30 pounds on before he shows up. I think he absolutely makes that class about as complete as it could be.
Absolutely. You know, they got a player who can play every position on the court, which is extremely important. And regarding Gus Gilchrist, you know, he's probably the most prototypical center the Hokies have brought in. You're not going to be able to tell it in size, but it's just the way he plays. He, you know, he's a good defender. He just has a physical presence down low, good rebounder. Over the summer, he was going up one-on-one against Patrick Patterson, who's a top 15 recruit, who's being recruited by, you know, Duke, UVA, a lot of big-time schools. And Gus Gilchrist did better against Patrick Patterson than pretty much any big man in the country has done. So I think that's a pretty good sign. And with Gilchrist signing, that puts the Hokies a borderline top 10 class. They've been rated as high as the 10th recruiting class in the country by Van Coleman. And actually the lowest I've seen their recruiting class ranked is number 16 by Rivals. But, you know, whatever the ranking, it's a good group of players, fills out a lot of needs, a player at each position. And I'm still in a little bit of shock that Seth was able to pull that off, considering the competition he was up against. There's still no separate basketball facilities. You know, I mean, it's just still very surprising to me. But when you think back to some of the players the Hokies have recruited in the past, you know, your Luke Miners and Deontay Smith.
Yeah, well, it's quite an upgrade, and I'll go to my grave believing this, Chris, that his first 2 years when he got that team competitive in the Big East opens some eyes that, man, you know, this guy did something that hasn't been done here. You know, they were supposed to be the laughing stock of the league, and they ended up wearing white in the first round of the tournament. And then the following year when he was the coach of the year in the ACC and they had a bye in the first round, they broke even in the ACC the first year. And that's when people started thinking, wow, it is viable. This is not a joke. You're not going to get run out of the gym. And it opened up some doors. Like you said, you know, this class, 3 4-stars and 2 3-stars. The smallest kid, they got somebody at every position, but even the guards are big. You know, Delaney's 6'3", Hudson's 6'4", a couple 6'7 wing guys. You can see this being five guys that he can play together.
Absolutely. I mean, you could see all five of these guys on the court at the same time, you know, at some point during their careers, and I think you probably will. It's, you know, every player in this class was ranked in the top 100 by at least one service. You look at Dorenzo Hudson and Jeff Allen, they're pretty much unanimous top 100 players. Jeff Allen may be top 35, top 40, some people consider him, and Dorenzo Hudson top 60. By some services. So, you know, it's just an all-around good class. And, you know, the lowest-rated recruit overall is Terrell Bell. But Van Coleman actually has Bell as the highest-rated member of Tech's recruiting class. So, you know, there are a lot of varying opinions, but the one opinion that everybody holds is this was a really good class.
Yeah, exactly. Solid class. You know, I had Seth on, can't remember, it was last week or 2 weeks ago. It was fairly recently. I said, but, you know, I know, Coach, the one thing you can sell this year and promise is playing time, because he's going to lose three guys who are going to have thousands of minutes and literally thousands of points. So I'm sure that is another thing that made Tech attractive to these young men. You're not waiting behind anybody. I mean, you know, Visayo will be back. Washington will be back. Munson and Witcher will be established. But these guys can come in and get minutes right off the bat.
Yeah, you might see a couple of these guys starting. You know, it depends. I don't know what they're going to do with Visayo or Deron Washington next year. Obviously, one of them will start at small forward. The other could potentially start at shooting guard. But if they don't want to go that route, you know, you could possibly see a Dorenzo Hudson sliding in there into the starting lineup. You could possibly see Jeff Allen starting a power forward. So, you know, there's just a number of different options that Seth will have next year with his starting lineup as he has this year. And, you know, that's what Seth likes. He likes a deep team that can get out and run the court, and he can substitute freely, and that's what he's building, and he's doing a good job of it.
Football. You know, the one thing about my new job and giving up the beat is I don't get to see as many games as I used to, although I'm still going to see some. I'm not going to be glued to the office. But I was in the office helping with the marathon section the other day, listening to that game on the radio, and I couldn't quite tell. You know, clearly you never felt Kent State was going to win that game. Defense just at another level for Kent State to handle. But you got to wonder, was it the two injuries on the line or were the other guys? Why could they not block Kent State? Why was Glennon under pressure against this team?
Well, that's a good question. I think Kent State did some things, obviously, that the Hokies hadn't seen on film. I know they slanted their defensive line in one direction and their linebackers in the other direction, and that kind of threw off the Tech blocking scheme in the first half. And they made some adjustments in the first half at halftime, because if you look at it, the two times Tech had the ball in the second half, they scored on both drives, and then they got the ball a third time right at the end of the game. They brought in Ike Whitaker, and they ran the clock out, basically. But I think a lot of it, you know, was not having those two offensive linemen, you know, Ron Schumann at left guard and Brandon Fry at left tackle. That's a big loss if you're throwing in Nick Marshman, who hasn't exactly played great when he's gotten playing time in the past. You know, he was abused a little bit at North Carolina when he started earlier in the year when Fry was hurt. So I think that was part of it. But at the same time, I don't think the Hokies were into the game very much. Which, you know, it's just human nature. You're coming off two huge wins over Clemson and a road win over Miami, and then you're coming home and playing Kent State from the MAC, a Kent State team who is much improved this year, obviously, but they lost to Buffalo 41-14.
Right.
Buffalo, who's, you know, one of the three or four worst teams in college football, they blew Kent State out of the water in the previous week. It's tough to get up for a team like that after you've played two emotionally drained games.
I thought a very telling quote, and I saw several of the papers had it from Brandon Orr. I need my starters back. And I'm like, whoa, that's pretty telling.
Yeah, I agree. I saw that quote, too, and it didn't get a lot of play on our message boards. But, you know, obviously, as a running back, you get used to running behind certain people. You know, and one thing that also needs to be pointed out is, you know, Kent State, obviously, the film on Brandon Orr is back now. He's a cutback runner, and I thought Kent State did a good job bringing a safety, an outside linebacker, or a cornerback up and having him take away the outside cutback lane. You saw Orr try to cut back to the outside on numerous occasions, and there was always a player there who wasn't necessarily rushing upfield and taking himself out of the play. He was just playing very disciplined, playing his assignment. He was always there to make the tackle whenever Orr cut back, so it was a good game plan by Kent State. But, yeah, you know, the Hokies were not into it mentally, plus the injuries obviously hurt.
You know, obviously Ryan Schumann out until the bowl game if he's able to retain. Hey, let me digress for 2 seconds, Chris. I'm saying if Tech wins Saturday and against Virginia, the Chick-fil-A, formerly the Peach, I'll always call it the Peach Bowl, will take Virginia Tech. That's based on no knowledge. That's just a hunch.
I have the same hunch. You know, the Hokies, it's been, you know, since obviously 1986, 20 years ago, since they went to the Chick-fil-A Bowl. I'll call it right. I've got a buddy who's associated with
But then it was the Peach Bowl.
Yeah, it'll get on me if I call it the Peach Bowl,
yeah,
so I'll call
yeah.
it the Chick-fil-A Bowl. But, yeah, I think, you know, that's always a very, very popular bowl, and the payout's gotten bigger. And they've had Miami in that game for the last 2 years, and, you know, Miami's not the greatest traveling fan base in the world, especially when you consider they can't even fill up their own home stadium. So I think the Peach Bowl is ready to bring in a team that's going to travel really, really well. And if the Hokies hold up their end of the bargain, I think they have a good chance of going of playing in the Chick-fil-A Bowl.
That's a great trip because you can stay the extra night and do New Year's Eve in Atlanta and then come back. So I know a lot of fans, and you can get there easily from here. And it's not Jacksonville. No disrespect to Jacksonville, but after going there twice in a month, I'm sure the Hokie fans are looking for something different. But Fry, I understand, is still questionable. They're not certain he'll play against Wake Forest. And, you know, this Wake Forest team, and I'm going to talk a little later in the show about that, but I want to get your thoughts, Chris. Golly. You know, you think, hey, isn't that cute? Nice little Wake Forest is, you know, winning some games, kind of pat him on the head like a good school kid. But, you know, when the real boys get out of school, it's ball game over. Well, they just tortured Florida State. I sat there watching that game thinking, you know, this isn't just a cute little team. This is a really good football team.
It really is. Especially
should be 10-0.
Especially defensively. Yeah, they easily could be 10-0. You know, a lot of people say it's their experience. A lot of people say it's their schemes and their trickeration. And it's a lot of that. But they have some very, very nice talent on the defensive side of ball, especially at linebacker. John Abadi, their middle linebacker, is very good. Aaron Curry is their outside linebacker. I'm particularly high on him. He's very athletic. I think one of their coaches was quoted that he's the first guy they want off the bus because he looks the part. 6'3", 240 pounds. He can run from sideline to sideline. You know, I'd take him in a heartbeat at Virginia Tech. And, you know, Wake can get better. They have two seniors starting up front on the defensive line, three seniors in the secondary. But their linebackers, they're starting two sophomores and a junior at linebacker. So they're only going to get better in their front seven, I think, over the course of the next couple of years. And obviously, I would expect their recruiting is probably picking up. Also, I know they got the number three player in the state in North Carolina back in February, Josh Adams, who will play some tailback for them next year, probably. So, you know, they have talent on that football team. It's not just their experience. It's not just Jim Grobe's crazy offensive schemes. They have some serious talent, especially at linebacker.
What do you think is going to – you know, I know when Mock got hurt, they lost somebody else early in the year. People were like, oh, my gosh, poor Wake. This was their year.
Like
but the Skinner,
Andrews, it was supposed to be
yeah,
a star tailback.
Right, after Barclay finally left. A lot of people were thinking, you know, poor Wake, but this Skinner kid's coming and played pretty well. What is your thought? Can Tech go in there and win Saturday?
Yeah, I think Tech can win. You know, I just spent that last segment saying how great Wake is, and, you know, they are a good football team. But I think they're really going to struggle to move the ball on the Hokies. Their offense is efficient. They have the best red zone offense in the conference. But, you know, they're averaging less than 300 yards a game, which I think is 101st in the country. They have so many running plays that where the runner runs parallel to the line of scrimmage in the backfield. And that's just not going to work against the Bud Foster defense. There's too much speed. And above all, that there's discipline. Tech is possibly the most disciplined defense in the country. So I don't think that misdirection, trickeration is going to work against the Tech defense. Wake is going to have to legitimately run the ball up the gut and drive the ball down the field in a traditional way. Because I don't think they're going to get a lot of those misdirection plays for big plays against Tech. So I like the Hokies' chances to really shut down Wake. I don't know how much the Hokies can score on the Wake defense, though. So, you know, it's going to be a low-scoring battle, but the Hokies are definitely used to those low-scoring games. And so I like Tech's chances this week, but it certainly wouldn't shock me if Wake won the game.
Well, you know, 2 years ago when I covered that game down there, that was a nail biter that took Mike Daniels batting to pass away in the last 5 seconds, or would have gone into overtime. And so, a lot of people tell you that might have been a better Tech team, and this is a better Wake team. So I'm really eager to see how that comes out. Hey, finally, Chris Coleman, and then I'll let you go. We've talked a little more football than I suspected, but that's okay. Two basketball games, haven't really played anybody of substance yet, so you can't tell. But you've seen the team. Give me a quick rundown, your impressions after two games.
Well, I think small forward position, obviously, Deron Washington and A.D. Visayo. Those guys are averaging between them about, 36 points a game. That's amazing production from one position. Obviously, their guards are their general solid selves. And the freshmen have looked good. You know, Munson missed the game last night because he had to attend the class. But he looked good in the first game. He knocked down his open jumpers. The one thing that kind of concerns me is they have more depth in the post. They're playing more players, but they haven't gotten a lot of production there yet. Coleman Collins had a double-double his first game, and Chiquita had 10 rebounds against Coppin State. But against West Florida the other night, Collins and Crabendam only combined for 12 points and 5 rebounds. And, you know, that's going to have to get better. I know Coleman Collins is banged up. I think he had a high ankle sprain in the preseason, and I think he's battling some other, maybe a hamstring injury now, was what Seth said on his postgame show last night. So I think they need to, before they go down to Orlando for that tournament, they need to go ahead and give Coleman some rest and let him get 100% healthy, because obviously when Coleman's 100% healthy, he's hard to handle. And the problem is he hasn't been 100% healthy that much in his career. And when he was 100% healthy last year, he wasn't mentally into the game, understandably. So that's something that's going to have to be straightened out as the post-play. I also believe the offense is still dependent on the guards getting penetration and breaking down the defense and then dishing it to a big man in the middle, as opposed to having a true post-up guy that they just feed down low. So from that standpoint, it looks similar to past Seth Greenberg offenses. But, you know, they're shooting the ball well, especially A.D. Fasaya, and you can't complain with the margin of victory so far. So I'm really looking forward to that tournament next week when we get some better competition.
Yeah, that'll be more of a gauge. All right, well, as always, you have done a great job pinch hitting. You can come to the plate anytime and sub for Chris Horn, Chris Coleman, the other Chris, as I like to call you. Great work. We appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, Mike. Always a pleasure.